Welcome back. Michael Warren Thomas here. It's Naturally Green, a less humid summer day. It's actually officially summer until middle of June, but it certainly has felt like it. And hope you are getting out in the garden, getting out in nature. It is there's a world of good. It doesn't mean you have to spend 3 hours in a forest, just 10-15 minutes, looking up at those trees and thinking that they've been around for 100, 200, maybe 300 years, in some cases, with the older oak trees. It doesn't take that much time, being out in nature, to have an effect, to lower blood pressure, to connect you with nature. So, whether it's your backyard or some trails or somewhere, just walking around your neighborhood, get outside. Douglas Tallamy has a book came out a few months ago, well, maybe a year ago, called Nature's Best Hope, a new approach to conservation that starts in your yard. And you should consider getting the book, partly because of the philosophy, partly because some of the practical ideas that he's been researching and speaking about, writing about for years. He's done a number of other books about nature. And the description says, Douglas Tallamy urges homeowners to take environmental action into their own hands, one yard at a time. This homegrown approach sidesteps the short-sightedness of governmental policy and the physical limitations of our isolated national parks, empowering us all to make our planet a better place. And that just comes with appreciating nature. It might be identifying a few birds that you notice in your yard or hear singing. It might be doing some planting and dividing. Hopefully this weekend it'll include some watering, because we are at a pretty severe water deficit at this point, at least in some of the sandy soils that I've been working in. We did have some rain a few days ago, but when you turn on the sun and the heat and the wind, that water doesn't hold for long, especially if you have new things that you've put in the ground. And generally the bigger the plant, whether it's a perennial or an annual or shrub tree, the bigger the plant, the more the transplant shock, the more water it's going to need to try to get it through to begin to grow on its own. So especially when it's this dry, and when you look at the forecast, it's going to stay this way. It's going to get cooler, which is nice, but today, tomorrow, Monday, Tuesday, all sun in the forecast. Wednesday, thunderstorms. Who knows whether they show up. Close to 90, and then Thursday and Friday this week, partly sunny. There is not much rain, if any, in the forecast, and lots of sun. So you can get out there and water with the hose, hand water. If you want to spend hours doing that, great, that might work. But most people don't spend enough time to really water those plants deeply. So you really need a sprinkler. And I would recommend using a sprinkler in a few areas of your yard just to soak things really well. And then maybe Monday, Tuesday, do some individual watering of newly planted things. And if the thunderstorm doesn't come on Wednesday, then time to do some more watering with a sprinkler. If you only water a little and frequently, The roots follow the water. They grow shallow. They go in search of the closest available water. And if it's just a little bit on the surface, the roots stay shallow and are going to depend on you for water rather than getting their own water down, going down deeper. So the idea with a sprinkler is that you soak down through the root zone a couple of inches down, and that's hard to do. Even with a sprinkler, you can put it there for an hour, and you take a trowel, and I think you'll be shocked at how little water, or how shallow the water penetrates, even in as much as an hour. It's just soaking into the mulch. If you have that, it's soaking into the soil, and it's just not that much water. You may have to put the sprinkler up for 2 hours, maybe even 3 hours, to get really deep watering. I don't know if I'd water my lawn at this point, but this kind of forecast, maybe at some point, you should give your lawn just one good soaking. But again, if there's so many people that take their hoses and their spray nozzles and they go out and they spray down the plants and spray the lawn a little bit, and it looks good because the leaves are glistening with the water, the ground looks damp, it kind of smells good, you know, you feel good, you've helped these plants, and in fact, you've really done largely nothing to help them. So it takes time, and you could do that with a sprinkler. You could also, when I've got newly planted things that are spread out, I don't want to water the entire property. So then I take the watering can and go and water those individually. But my neighbors, other people probably think I'm nuts because I'll circle back and I'll water the same things 2, 3, 4 times. They already probably thought I was nuts. But, you know, the reason to do that is if you take your watering can and you water a plant you just put in yesterday, let's say, a lot of that water runs off. It doesn't soak in, but it gets the surface damp. And the second time you go around, more of that water soaks down and through, less runs off. And the third and fourth times you go around, you're finally getting water into the root zone. And again, encouraging those roots to grow deeply rather than staying shallow. It makes a huge difference. It really does. And again, it feels a little crazy, but again, take a trowel. You know, water that plant once, take the trowel. I'll bet the water didn't even reach the soil, if there's any mulch there at all. It just soaks into the mulch and runs off. The second time, you'll see a little bit more soaking in, less running off. And you take the trowel, and you can see that darker, moist layer at the surface. And then you go back a couple times, and finally you've got something that's been really watered and is not going to need to, you know, be watered 3 times today because it keeps wilting. So we do need to do some watering, as crazy as that feels given the rain that we have had. But the rain has been spotty. There was one point when I was on the east side of Rochester, very little rain. Came back to where I live in the city, and they'd had a deluge of rain. And actually, I was somewhere like on 441, and suddenly, closer to the city, the pavement was wet, puddles were everywhere, and there was, you know, these thunderstorms and things are very deceiving. And you may not get any rain, or you may get a lot. And if you get a lot, quickly, that may just run off. So beware of things that you've just planted this week and do some extra watering. Also, I've been challenged by probably rabbits. It's possible it's deer, but probably rabbits. Each year I bring some sunflowers over to a friend and plant them, and often they get eaten to the ground. You know, these sunflowers are, you know, like 12 inches, 14 inches high. They're not small sunflowers, but they're volunteers from our garden. And these, whatever's eating them just eats the whole thing, which a rabbit could certainly do. And I've seen rabbits in this area, but it's also possible deer are doing it, although I think they would eat other things also. But, you know, we eat sunflower shoots. They are kind of tasty. So I put some cayenne powder and ground cayenne on the sunflowers when I planted them this year, thinking, you know, I'm going to stay ahead of these critters and make it too spicy for them to eat. But then the rain came, took that off, and I forgot to add more, and then they came and ate, I think, five of the eight sunflowers that I planted are gone, chopped down and completely gone. So I put some more cayenne on the remaining three, and we'll see if we can get them tall enough that whatever critter this is can't reach them or chop them down. So the rabbits, they're cute, but they've been eating a bunch of other perennials in this case. And actually, I found a couple spots where they had their babies, where they were, you know, their nest. It's sort of after the fact, I could tell that it kind of looked like a rabbit's nest, which is in the ground and not very deep and lined with, you know, with grass and things, dead grass. So I you know, detective work says that there are a bunch of rabbits around in this area. So we'll see if the hot pepper, cayenne, chili powder can keep them away from these sunflowers until they get, say, 3 feet high, maybe it'll be all right. But I got to keep reapplying it after it rains, or, you know, put the sprinkler on. We have a special guest with us from Herd Orchards, which is now open for the season. It's Amy McIntyre. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning. Today filled with country sunshine up here.
It is lovely. A little less humid, too, which is kind of nice. And give us an update on what's happening at Herd Orchards right now.
Yeah, well, we are open Thursdays and Saturdays from 11 to 3 now, which is really exciting. But I wanted to start by giving everyone just a little fruit report. So we're fruit growers for 200 years, and so spring is a really big deal. And I just thought it was kind of newsworthy that, you know, if we can remember back before that nice kind of 90-degree stretch we've just come out of and the other little warm burst, we very shortly ago had 10 days of snow and rain mixed every single day, gloomy, and sub-zero temperatures down into 29, 28 degrees at night on certain nights. And that was exactly at the same moment that a lot of the stone fruit was in bloom. Apples were a little after that. And so I just wanted to report that we are feeling that it's something of a miracle, because our fruit trees are hanging heavy with little baby green fruit. So I'm looking right now at cherries, tiny little green cherries hanging like marbles in the trees and really thick on the branches. We were thrilled to see peaches in a full set, maybe not every variety, but most of them. And then apples are so many that we're going to have to thin fruit, and that just for everyone who isn't aware of how you grow fruit, if there are too many little fruits in certain types of fruit on the tree, you need to knock some off in infancy, or they take the nutrients of the tree, and the tree becomes weak for the next year, but also the fruit is, I would call it even unsaleable, you know, just marginally will get enough nutrients from the root system. So we have enough apples that we're going to be thinning apples, and I just think it's really, particularly with all the national and international news, that this tiny little miracle of nature, we really thought we were going to come out of that cold, unusually cold stretch with a dire outcome. And
that's
it's
happened
the
before. That's happened, before, right?
Oh, we have been, there have been springs in the past where we've been, you know, secretly and quietly devastated inside, realizing the impact of late spring frost, which essentially we had many of this year. And so I actually have to say that sometimes nature is mystifying. And even though we're experienced fruit growers and we have some, you know, really top-notch advisors assisting with the management of our farm, you know, everybody kind of scratches their head this year and says, well, how did this happen? You know, how on earth could we have this much fruit on the trees? It was really kind of fantastic. Now, I also thought it would be fun to just share a little bit of the what we do to try to mitigate or manage all of that process. And there are a lot of things that fruit growers do quietly to try to make winter into spring okay. Number one, we don't fertilize too late in the year. So I know you've got tons of gardeners listening to you. And one little quiet message is, unless it's an annual plant that is planted every year, if it's a perennial, you don't fertilize much after the middle of June. So if you're going to put on your compost or whatever, do it now. Like, we're racing to get the last little fertilizing done, even right now. And then you don't want that late growth that will be too tender, too at risk going through winter and into spring. The other thing is we quickly on our farm this spring, realizing that cherries were in full bloom, peaches were in bloom during that 10-day period, we needed to do something different than the honeybee, because the honeybee, even though it's glorious, is a prima donna. It just, the honeybee doesn't want to fly unless it's a day like today. Today's a honeybee day. Just balmy and sunny and gorgeous. And so we have worked before with a business in Michigan that propagates and cultivates and generates bumblebees. Bumblebees, a native bumblebee, is much more resilient, I'd say. It's not that I'm anti-honeybee, believe me, but it flies at 40 degrees, it flies in the rain, it flies in the wind, and so we actually have 12 hives of bumblebees on our farm, and we've done that before, but this year we really realized that it was super, really super important, and so we have our bumblebee hives, which are still active and beautiful and flying around and doing great things, and they are an interesting, you know, a really interesting bee, and hopefully what will happen is that queen, once the worker bees die off, which they live only about 6 weeks, the worker bees, she'll start a new hive somewhere. So we've put out bumblebee hives. I doubt that they'll actually be the choice of the queen, but ideally. And then she'll lay eggs for males for fertilizing and for future queens. And then that new hive will be ready for next spring. So hopefully we're actually starting additional bumblebees on our farm. So that's kind of cool. Actually, I think it worked pretty well because the bees were out even when it was cold. I don't think that's the actual answer to the whole great report, but it's a piece of it. And then, of course,
right, not a simple solution. You tackle it in all these different ways.
Yeah, it's enormously complex. And then, of course, we were regretful that we didn't have frost protection systems in full deploy. And one of the things that I just think people need to realize is that Western New York is this microclimate that is exquisite. And we are, as fruit growers, we are lazy because we've been living in the lap of luxury, because that big old Lake Ontario, Lake Erie to our west, gives us a microclimate that protects us. And actually, the way it works is quite great, because water changes temperature very slowly. Land changes temperature very quickly. You know, there's something called the continental climate. If you were in the interior of the country or out in the Ural Mountains, you would have wild extremes of temperature in the hundreds in the summer and bitter cold in the winter. We don't get that. We are all moderated because the lakes are holding the temperature. So what happens for fruit growers is that traditionally the water stays cool and shelters us from any deep winter cold. That's great, but also too early waking up. So we generally don't get fruit that pushes early in the spring. It's late, and that may be the reason we came through this year so beautifully, because nothing really had begun too early in the game. What we aren't practiced in is what some other areas that are fruit-growing regions, the Carolinas, Florida, California, are very practiced in, and that is winter or spring frost protection. So we're laggards in our knowledge of the technology. People are learning rapidly here in Western New York as we face different kinds of spring. Wind towers, overhead irrigation frost systems, frost drains in a low spot to suck the cold air down and pull that upper atmosphere warm down with it over the trees. Old-fashioned but high-tech versions of smudge pots to actually heat orchards. And these things are all being used in other parts of the world and other parts of the country. And we're just not quite there yet in New York, and in my observation. People have installed things, but not to cover everything. And so
they're very expensive.
These are huge.
And you might use them for a few hours a year.
Exactly.
I mean,
a few hours every several years, maybe. They don't cover vast areas. And that's one of the head scratchers, is that if you have a lot of fruit trees, you know, and you have a wind tower that covers 10 acres, well, and a huge investment, where do you put it? What's your best investment? So they usually, any mitigation, usually investment goes into the high value, you know, high return varieties and crops. And so there's a lot left on the margins. So anyway, I just thought that was a really cool report.
I wanted
report.
To mention that those wind machines, because I've seen them at wineries, only a couple in the Finger Lakes, but lots in the Niagara Peninsula, actually, in Canada, their wineries, where the land is really flat. Those wind machines cost something like $35,000, and that actually was a price from a couple of years ago. So you're paying $35,000, but it might save $100,000 worth of fruit 1 year. I mean, it's a insurance policy.
It is an insurance policy, and then you're absolutely right to talk about the numbers because I don't think people realize the investment in agriculture overall. It's enormous. And a lot of times those decisions might come down to the value of those grapes or the actual value of the specific apple varieties. Are you really going to do that for Macintosh, where the price has been, you know, plunging over the last few years? And so those are really big, big, long-range, you know, looking into the far, far future and for future generations investments that growers make. So anyway, I wanted to give that report because I think that folks in Western New York should anticipate, you know, God willing, that we don't experience any other unforeseen weather events or other crises. But the fruit on the trees is, it's just beautiful. And another little thing I wanted to share is that we picked the first ripe strawberry yesterday. Now, that doesn't mean we have them
that's
in bounty
news.
To sell yet.
Right.
But it's exciting. And so we had four rows that we did a new kind of row cover on that was a little bit more intense. We babied it. My daughter Amelia and I actually, with several helpers, kind of managed that project starting way back in February. And so row covers on, row covers off, row covers on, row covers off, double layers some nights. And so those four little rows of a brand new planting, a variety that we've loved for years called Jewel, great flavor, are going to, I think by next weekend, I think we'll have some strawberries to actually sell. Now it's just a couple here and there for us to eat. And, you know, that is the coolest too. The big strawberry crop will be timed right about Father's Day. But at least we'll have a fun little tease going into next week, which is exciting. And then lastly, Michael, I can't stay on too long right at this moment, but lastly, I just wanted to say, you know, I always feel like it's such a privilege to be a grower. And I feel as though our world is this separate little universe that we inhabit with all of its activities and all of its dynamics. And so sharing it is really fun. So other things that have been going on, of course, 'tis the season of new investment and new plantings. And so on our farm, we've put in 3 new acres of apple. We've been, you know, we baby those ancient trees around the market, but we've put in a new section of several dozen young cherry trees right there at our market, which is exciting. A brand new peach orchard with multiple varieties is in the ground. Now, remember, all of those babies are 3, 4, 5 years out before we get a crop, so talk about right. Long-term investment. But it's exciting, and as we speak, the post pounder is pounding posts in, and our team is stringing deer fence and trellis wires, and again, it's kind of a all-out effort on all fronts. People planning, you know, the planning, some of those baby trees were started for us 3 years ago and paid for 3 years ago, and only now, you know, here and in the ground, you know, careful watering, irrigation systems going in. And I'm saying it in that way because it's big stuff. I mean, we may be a medium-sized farm, but these are big, big projects. And the other thing that's, I think, just profoundly important is that they're projects that are filled with hope and with the future. I mean, this isn't a zinnia that we're going to plant and have this summer and it'll be all over and next year is another year. These are things that have been, you know, the arch of planning and realization and the long-term kind of belief in our future is a huge, long trajectory. And, you know, they're really generational plantings in a way. And I think that's exciting. I think it's profound. But sometimes I often wonder whether the non-farming public may not realize the intensity of the investment, the intensity of the effort, and the way we kind of put ourselves on the line for something that we hope will become a reality, you know, way, way, way down the line. And for me, that gives me goosebumps, and I think it does for everyone in the fruit world. And I think it's important for listeners here in Western New York to realize that and to feel that and to know that all around here in Western New York, fruit growers are doing this. And it's a big deal. It's not simple. It may be an everyday activity, but it's not a casual activity. These are serious investments and serious belief in our area and in the world of food, wholesome food, in communities, investment in families and in farm family helpers. These are big, big, big things that people are doing, and this is the season for that, and it is exciting to see. So I would recommend taking a drive this beautiful weekend. You know, if there's a farm store open, support them. We need it. Beyond all other years, ours and all others, but also just soak in what specifically Western New York means. And it is different from other places in the country and the world, and it's really unique. So realize that and just enjoy it.
And this morning we'll talk about generational. In the next couple hours, we'll talk to your daughter and your mother, I think, and you will.
Yep.
We'll get several generations' point of views.
Yep, exactly. Okay, thank you so much, and just enjoy the sunshine, everybody.
Thanks, Amy.
Yep, bye.
Bye-bye. That's Amy McAmer from Herd Orchards, and they are just west of Brockport on Route 104. as she said, limited hours right now. And we'll get more details in the next hour on the food show about what they're doing. Of course, even though the hours are limited, they do have pies available. As I've said numerous times, their pies are just extraordinary. They are fantastic pies. And by the way, I got a couple of frozen pies just a few weeks ago, and they have those available. You can, you know, call ahead and order things like that if you want to bake them on your own. And I've got an apple pie for myself, and I've got a frozen cherry pie for my engineer Jeff, because I think he likes cherry pie. And this way he can bake it when he wants it. So we've got to get the cherry pie there over to the station for Jeff. And their pies are just outrageously good. So again, we'll talk more in the food show about reopening of restaurants and things. Many have reopened with outdoor service only, but not all of them. I was reading Red Fern posted that they will be closed probably for another month. So don't assume that all restaurants are open because you've heard that they can serve outdoors. Not all restaurants can serve outdoors very easily or have that kind of space, or are not maybe able to bring their staff back on very quickly, or still want to take extra precautions and kind of wait and see what happens and reopen in a few weeks. So don't assume everyone's open. Check their websites, check Facebook, give them a call. And the same goes for stores. Places like the Birdhouse, they are open. The Artful Gardener has reopened her store, but you know, a lot of them taking extra precautions, and be aware of that and be careful. If you have comments, questions in your garden, wondering what to do, when to do it, maybe even if you should do it, email me, michael@saverlife.com. Someone posted a photo of some seedlings earlier this week, and they were wondering what they were. Some people thought they were mugwort, which is a plant you do not want in your yard. It is a very, very invasive weed that gets tall and has aggressive root systems. But then I looked at some feverfew in my garden and realized that the photo was probably feverfew seedlings, which is very easy to pull out. And if they have little daisy-like flowers, mine are not quite in bloom yet, but coming soon, I'll have little bouquets of feverfew flowers in my yard. And they look almost identical, the mugwort and the feverfew, but the mugwort has more points on the leaves, and the feverfew has more rounded edges on the leaves. So you've got to look closely, but this person had feverfew, and I kind of like it. It's actually used in some cases to treat migraine headaches, but don't do that without the advice of an expert. You don't want to just start eating feverfew, hoping to get rid of your migraine. That would not be a good idea. But it does have herbal uses. And I just cut the flowers down when they're done blooming so that I don't get as many seedlings in the future. And then it often sends up a second growth of flowers. So feverfew is a wonderful plant. And again, mugwort, something you want to avoid at almost all costs. We will take a quick break. Be back after a word from our sponsors. Welcome back. Mike Warren Thomas here, the sponsors of Naturally Green. And as I mentioned, Sarah's Garden Center was my original sponsor. Stephen and Kathy Kepler at that time had Kepler's Gardens, which still one of my all-time favorite garden centers. Their location on Chilai Avenue had some beautiful gardens. But they didn't own the property. It was leased, and it is now a car wash and gas station. But they own the property out in Brockport at Sarah's Garden Center, and that's allowed them to put in some extraordinary stonework, some stone workshops that they've done for about a decade each October. And it's amazing to see the honeymoon gate, which is a circle of stones you can walk through and kind of explore their gardens, get some ideas for your own gardens, see how some plants look when they get mature, and how big they get, how they look in combination with other things. And then a fabulous selection of plant material, perennials, annuals, vines, small shrubs, and small trees. It's really a lot of fun to explore Sarah's Garden Center in Brockport. Open 7 days a week. It's sarahsgardencenter.com. You can follow them on Facebook and see some of the photos from their gardens. sarahsgardencenter.com. Also brought to you by the Birdhouse on Monroe Avenue. They have now reopened, so you can go in the store. But if you prefer not to, you're being extra careful, they can bring something out to you as well. And they've got all kinds of bird feeders. Someone was just describing their mason bee house to me, and they've got mason bee houses, which are great native pollinators. They've got tons of different kinds of bird seed, and a really knowledgeable staff. If you're hoping to attract a certain kind of bird, maybe a certain birdhouse or type of feeder or type of feed will help you do that. That's thebirdhouseny.com. Also, they've been doing lots of videos. Their tea and tweets, which have normally been on Tuesday mornings there at the store, have been videotaped, so you can check those out after the fact, learn about different types of birds, and including Liz was playing some of the calls of the birds, which was kind of fun to hear. So again, thebirdhouseny.com, Monroe Avenue, right near Clover and right around the corner from Gallia's Tropical Greenhouse and Florist, which is a gorgeous spot. Lots of plants, but also the big green eggs that are great for grilling. Might be a fun Father's Day gift, a big green dinosaur egg for Father's Day. What more could one ask for? And they have kind of a cult following because these big green eggs, they work really well. Their space-age ceramics insulate them. You use less charcoal. They're more, they're fairly easy to regulate in terms of temperature. So check them out at Gallia's, G-A-L-L-E-A-S, Gallia's.com, and also on Facebook. When you call and visit our sponsors, tell them you heard about it here on Naturally Green. I'm going to tell you again now if you're still listening there. If you're driving into town with the dark cloud above you, dialing the number who's bound to love you. Call me at the station. The lights are all big. Welcome back. Mike Warren Thomas here. It's Naturally Green. You can tell it's June for a couple of reasons. The Coosa dogwoods have started to bloom, and I've got one in my yard. Actually, I got two in my yard. Might take that back. I have about five in my yard because they've started seeding themselves a little bit, but I have two big ones, and last year one of them bloomed and set a million berries, which my dog was eating when they fell out of the dogwood, and I was, they're not toxic to animals, but I was, you know, there were, it must have been 1,000 of these on the tree, and maybe 500, but a lot of them, and I really didn't want the dog eating that many of them, so I was actually picking a bunch of these and composting them. But this year, very few flowers. And some of these plants do seem to go on this pendulum of 1 year lots of flowers and fruit, and another year not so many flowers and fruit. And that can happen with fruit trees too. And as Amy McComber was saying earlier from Herd Orchards, part of that is weather-based, and part of that might be, when the tree has too much fruit, it takes away the nutrients and stresses the tree or vine, and so you end up getting less that next year. So the pendulum can be swinging for a lot of reasons, but the tree's not as pretty this year, but I don't think I'll have to pick hundreds and hundreds of Coosa dogwood fruit off it either. So it's a late blooming dogwood. The native dogwoods are generally wrapping up blooming now, and the Coosa dogwoods bloom more the month of June. They bloom a long time. Nice tree. But if I were to choose, one or two trees to add to my yard, probably wouldn't be a Coosa dogwood. That might be like my third choice. Red buds and service berries, probably my first two choices for a tree to have in my yard for length of bloom, and also for the berries on service berry, the heart-shaped leaves and the red buds, and they bloom earlier, which I'm more desperate for flowers in April, May than I am in June. So nice tree, not native. The native dogwoods they do better further south. They live here, they survive here, they don't really flourish here, and there's a reason it's called Cornus florida. They like warmer temperatures. They do better down in North Carolina and Georgia and south of Pennsylvania than they do here. And they survive here. You may have a white dogwood. Pink dogwoods are even less hardy. But I wouldn't invest much money in buying native dogwoods unless you have a very protected spot. There's other trees that are going to be longer lived for you than the native dogwood. And if you're looking for recommendations on a tree or shrub or some perennials for a certain area, maybe an area that's in the shade and kind of wet, send me a couple of photos if you can. That always helps. You can email me, michael@saverlife.com. There are lots of choices, but one of the reasons I mentioned a photo is that everyone has their own idea of what shade means. For some people, shade means doesn't get quite as much sun as other parts of the yard. Sometimes it means the place is just downright dark because there are so many big trees above it with limbs that are down low to the ground. And so I'm going to add some more light to my garden by pruning my Coosa dogwood, the one in the backyard, so I get more light down underneath it. I've got some European ginger growing there. Just planted a few little starts of ornamental grass called Hakuna Kloa, which I saw a photo someone posted. I think it was a gardening business of some kind. I don't know how I ran into this photo, but the Hakuna Kloa grass doesn't get very tall and kind of lies down a little bit. The one I have is a variegated yellow, mainly yellow, with a little bit of green. and they had planted this like a river through other shade plants. It's a shade. Most ornamental grasses like the sun. This one likes the shade. And so in a little tiny area, I'm trying to replicate that idea with a slope and sort of winding underneath my Coosa dogwood, which, you know, I live in the city of Rochester, so we're talking about a space that's, you know, 6 feet by, or actually 5 feet by 12 feet, maybe. We're not talking about big space. But I love the way that that grass sort of lays down and it grows toward the sun. So that's where this little river of ornamental grass will grow in my yard. And that yellow color against the European ginger, glossy, dark green leaf is, that's going to be pretty stunning. So you don't have to do things in a big way, but it is going to take this ornamental grass a couple of years to grow out to look like this. I put in some very small starts of it. I could have purchased, you know, six of them, and I'd have an instant river. But I'd have, for one thing, I'd have trouble digging holes for plants that were that big near this dogwood, the Coosa dogwood, because of the roots of the tree. And it would be vastly more expensive. So instead of dividing one into probably seven pieces, I would have to buy, you know, seven plants at, it's a slow growing plant, so it's not inexpensive perennial, probably $12 a piece, and, you know, $100 worth of plants to create my little river. That'd be nice, but I kind of like letting things grow and watching them change over time, and I like spending less money. So for, if this was a small plant, it might have been, it was maybe $6. So $6 versus $100, I think might be a bargain. We'll see. And often smaller things will adapt and grow faster. So, you know, yeah, you look, maybe I'm cheap, but, you know, in the long run, sometimes the smaller plants will adapt better. They'll catch up and maybe even pass that big plant that you put in because you wanted sort of instant effect. And that's fine. It's just a kind of a different strategy. But in terms of trees, if you're thinking about a shad tree or a redbud or a Coosa dogwood or an oak tree, if you want to add a tree to your yard, it's about a year of recovery for every inch of diameter of the trunk of that tree. So a one-inch tree is not a very big tree. Probably can't put it in your car, or you probably have to have it delivered, but it's not really a very big tree. But it will adapt faster than the three-inch tree, which is going to be a very expensive tree and definitely has to be delivered, and someone else has to plant that tree because the root ball on that you probably won't be able to move. And you'll spend a lot more money on that three-inch tree. So 5 years from now, you might not be able to tell the difference. Well, let's say maybe 6-7 years. You wouldn't be able to tell the difference between those two trees, the one-inch tree and the three-inch tree. It's likely that one-inch tree will catch up with that bigger tree because it gets two or three more years of growth as that other one is just trying to recover. So the bigger the plant, the longer the recovery period, and it's okay if it takes some time. I'll take a quick break, be back afterwards from our sponsor. You would not believe your eyes if 10 million fireflies lit up the world as I fell asleep. Cause they fill the open air and leave teardrops everywhere. You'd think me rude, but I would just stand and stare. I'd like to make myself believe that.
It's hard to say that I'd rather stay awake when I'm asleep, because everything is never as...
Welcome back. Mike Warren Thomas here with the sponsors of Naturally Green and some great places for you to visit, including Broccolo Tree and Lawn Care and their nursery, Broccolo Nursery and Garden Center on 441. And I was just there earlier this week dropping off some praying mantis egg case, which is supposed to hatch out 100 to 200 little baby praying mantis or mantisi or whatever the plural of praying mantis is. They're going to let people know via social media when that happens, and you could potentially go get a little baby praying mantis. Broccolo has for many years worked a lot with native gardens, native trees and shrubs and perennials in their designs and installations. They also do patios and water features, creating some outdoor spaces for people, and do maintenance too. So if you need some help with your lawn, trees and shrubs, get a free quote from them. It's 424-4476. The nursery and garden center is on 441 just east of Turkhill Road and Route 250. Also brought to you by Wisteria Flowers and Gifts, one of our long-time sponsors, about two decades. They've been with us, wisteriaflowersandgifts.com, located on Culver Road right near University. If you want to brighten someone's day with some flowers, maybe they don't have gardens to cut flowers from, get them a bouquet from Wisteria. They can deliver it for you. It's wisteriaflowersandgifts.com. Also brought to you by Palmiter's Garden Nursery, one of our destination nurseries around our region. You got to go see their gardens. Just beautiful. Lots of peonies still in bloom. Some tree peonies still available in their sales area. They something that they specialize in, but lots of other annuals, perennials, probably one of the biggest selections of pepper plants you'll see anywhere, different varieties of peppers from sweet to like dangerously hot peppers, and beautiful containers too. Definitely the place you need to go, not just every spring, but maybe several times a year to see their gardens, to see what's new among the plants. I picked up a bunch of plants this past week. It's Palmiter's Garden Nursery, just south of Avon, between Avon and Geneseo on Route 39. It's 39 at Paper Mill Road. And finally, the Arbor Barber, Steve and Emily Leidy, can help with pruning, thinning, removal of trees. They don't do fertilizing or transplanting or things like that, but they will take down trees if the weed trees have grown too big or if you have shade where you previously had sun. You may be time to have some trees pruned. It's not something you want to do with a chainsaw or have a friend or neighbor do with a chainsaw or relative. Yeah, they're just too dangerous. Get a professional to do it, don't take the risks that the chainsaws make. There's a reason that workers' compensation insurance is so high for companies that use chainsaws, because they're dangerous. So get a professional, get the Arbor Barber, 289-4117. Also, Bergen Water Gardens, they are out in between Churchville and Bergen with lots and lots of lotus, and those are starting to send up buds. They love this hot weather, and you might want a lotus for your garden. You can put it in a pot. They have ceramic pots that are really gorgeous that you can grow a lotus in. They also have tropical water lilies, got some more in from Thailand, and have some amazing carnivorous plants. A phenomenal selection of those. BergenWaterGardens.com for more details. They are open now for the season. When you call and visit our sponsors, tell them you heard about it here on Naturally Green. She likes weeds. They're easy to grow. She likes. Welcome back. Mike Warren Thomas here. It's Naturally Green. And yesterday, I jumped in and decided to take my elephant ear and divide it, see what the root system looked like. I didn't really know what to expect. I watched a few videos on dividing elephant ears. I've had this one for probably 6 years, bring it in for the winter. Makes a great house plant. And what I discovered was that I have probably like seven tubers now from the one I started with, of various sizes, including some little ones. And I'm hoping that this will be more successful than when I tried to divide a peace lily, which is very different. These were separate tubers. I cut a peace lily, which is not usually used outside at all, just as a houseplant, but I thought I could make more houseplants with it, and actually managed to kill all of those. So I took one really nice peace lily and had nothing when I was done. But I'm more confident with this elephant ear, and I divided that peace lily before you could go online and watch videos of how to divide some of these things, which we don't spend a lot of time usually growing and dividing these tropical plants. And so I think these elephant ears will work pretty well. And now they'll get bigger leaves on them in separate pots. So look online before you divide something to see if you can get a sense for what the root system looks like, because they vary tremendously, and it makes a huge difference in how you divide them.